Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff, and we talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. If you've listened to this segment, this program, which happens about once a month, if you've listened in the past, you know Gordon Fricke knows cars and trucks and engines really well, and transmissions and suspensions. If you have a question, get in line now, 1-800-348-2551. You can also check in online by visiting the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop, and you can see all the ways that you can get in touch with us right there via the World Wide Web. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org. But the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. By the way, before we start the show, I want to remind you that we have a new app, and it's pretty snazzy. I think snazzy is the term the kids are using these days. 23 Skidoo went out, and it's snazzy, all right. You can download our new mobile app for streaming audio, headlines, podcasts, and more. Just go to the iTunes or Google Play App Store and search WAMC and install. I think you're going to like it. Well, with that taken care of, Gordon Fricke, welcome back to the show. How are you, my friend?
Thanks, Ray. I'm doing fine.
Gas quality, it's always in the news, isn't it?
Yes, yep. Gasoline is quite a liquid. And
it is.
Back in the 70s, we started seeing fuel injection systems appear on European cars.
Yeah.
And that was quite a thing, even late 60s in some cases. And then in the late 70s, early 80s, late 80s, U.S. cars and Japanese cars started adapting to it. And by the 90s, every automobile for that part part of the segment was fuel injected.
And almost everything is now.
Oh yeah. The only thing that have carburetors, and some people don't even know what a carburetor is, but lawnmowers and small engines and things like that.
Why?
Fuel injection systems are much more efficient, much more precise. You can get more power and better economy out of an engine. They pollute less. It's just a much better method of distributing fuel to an engine. Along with that, the gasoline wasn't ready for it, and we started seeing deposits building up on intake valves, pistons, combustion chambers, creating havoc with how these engines started and ran. And sometimes it didn't happen right away. It took thousands of miles. So the the gasoline companies realized they needed more detergents. So they blended more detergents in, and things calmed down. Now we're seeing a new type of injection system appearing on lots of cars, and it's called direct injection. And the fuel injector is in a different spot now. It's spraying it directly into the combustion chamber of the engine instead of on the other side where it hit the intake valve.
So, why the change? More efficiency?
Again, same thing. Even more efficient, even more power, better fuel economy, even lower emissions.
Okay.
Now we're getting deposits again because the injector's in a different spot. It's a lot hotter. Things are happening down there in this part of the engine that didn't happen before. And the need for what they're calling now top-tier gasoline has become important. And that's basically a group of gas producers that are in they call it their top tier. They're the highest amount of detergents and quality. And there's a list of them. You get online, you can check and see if you're using top tier gas or not. If you are not and you have a direct injected car, you should be using some type of an additive periodically, like the good old Tecron we talk about.
Absolutely. And it's great stuff. But the direct injection is only a small segment of the new cars out there?
No, it's really gaining a lot of popularity. It started out on, I believe, European engines, and now you're seeing it on a lot of cars because the technology is so much better and so much more fuel efficient.
Are there any vehicles on the road today, consumer vehicles, that have carburetors?
Nothing that's produced. No, I mean,
wow.
Yeah, old stuff, yes.
Of course.
New stuff, no.
Wow. All right, let's go to the phones. And Margaret in Lee, you're first. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2006 Mazda 3, and I have a question about tie rods and or tie rod bushings. My dealership told me I needed the tie rod bushing replaced, and my local dealer said, no, just the tie rod. And basically, I've had them all replaced. I still have this sort of clicking noise often when I start driving. And I've also been told that it's not very important. You know, so I just want to know, is the bushing a separate part from the tie rod? How important is it? And anyway, just a bit more about tie rods.
Yeah.
I've had all four replaced at this stage.
Yeah, tie rods are very important because they're what link basically you steering your steering wheel, which goes down into the steering rack in the case of your car, and then the tie rods connect the steering mechanism to the wheels. So if one of those were to break, you'd be in serious trouble. And they do wear. It's a wear and tear item. We replace them all the time. And they will, if they're very worn, you will get rattling noises when you go through bumps. But I think what you've got are two different things happening. Your dealer mentioned bushings, and I think what they're referring to are, they probably call them sway bar bushings or stabilizer bar bushings.
Yes, it's more the, I think, sway bar, yeah.
Yes, the sway bar bushings are not as critical by any means as the tie rods as far as a safety concern, but they will give you lots of rattling and knocking noises when you go through various bumps. The bushing itself is surrounded by a metal collar that holds it into the subframe of the car, so they really can never completely come out of there. But the rattling and noise is going to get worse, and you should replace them because they do have an effect on the way the car handles and the stability of the car. That's why it's called a stabilizer or sway bar. So they're not an immediate danger like the tie rods could be, but you really should get them replaced. And then the shop wants to very carefully check the sway bar end links, because they're what hook the bar to the suspension. And if you get all that taken care of, the car will be remarkably quiet when you go through bumps.
Okay. So is the sway bar bushing a separate thing from the sway bar?
Yes, it is. Yep. Very inexpensive item, really, the sway bar bushing itself.
Okay. But I assume that the labor may be a little more expensive.
Some cars it's very easy. Some cars it's horrible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, how about on the Mazda, the 2006 Mazda?
I don't think that's a nasty one, but Mazda did have a model called a 626 many years ago, and they were a nightmare to change.
I hope you don't have a 626, Margaret.
No, I don't.
Oh, good for you. Well, thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Let's go to Dave in Greenfield. Hi, Dave, you're on.
Hi, guys. Hi, Mr. Fricky. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. You were talking about gas, and I actually have a question about gas. I had heard that you should never fill up at a gas station when the tanker is there filling the tanks. Have you ever heard anything like that?
Wow, absolutely. And
why?
Here's the theory behind that, and I think it's pretty valid.
All right.
So especially if it's an older station the tanks have been in the ground a long time. Let's say those tanks are close to being empty. The tanker pulls up and he throws the giant nozzle in the fill pipe and lets it go, and he's putting in hundreds and hundreds of gallons. That gas falls down into that tank, which is several feet below the surface of the ground, and it swirls up everything that's in that tank. So if the bottom of that tank has a lot of debris from all the years that settles in there, and you're going to have water, you're going to have various particles, you're going to have junk that just inevitably gets in the loads. It can make a big mess for a while, and if you just happen to be the guy getting your tank filled when that mess is all stirred up at the pickup of your pump, you definitely can get a tank full of very bad gas.
Wow.
Well, I had another related question. Is that okay?
Sure.
What about off-brand gas, you know, the sort of smaller stations? You know, I've also heard that some people only go for Mobil. I don't know if I should mention names.
Well, you just did.
Oh, sorry. Well, I just forget I said that. But off-brand gasoline, where do they get their gas, and is it safe to put that in my car?
Yeah. Great question.
Yeah, it is, because everybody asks that. Isn't gas just plain gas? Well, it starts out that way. It gets refined from crude oil, and you get all kinds of other products out of that. When that raw gasoline goes to the brand, Mobil, Hess, or whatever, they then tailor that to their standards. They put in various additives, and there are detergents in there, and there's a whole bunch of things that go into gasoline that makes it the way it is. And Ray and I were just talking earlier, and then we led in with gasoline quality. The term now is top tier gas,
right?
And those name the refineries or the gas companies that are using the highest levels of additives, and they blend their fuel to the highest quality, and there definitely is a difference. And in your newer vehicles with direct fuel injection engines, those cars really should be using top tier gasoline.
Wow. Now, you're not speaking of premium.
We're not talking about the octane.
Right.
We're talking about
the station.
No, we're talking about the level of additives that are blended into it.
Okay.
So octane is a different story, and that you need to follow the recommendation of your owner's manual or your gas door on your car.
Okay, we got to take a break here, but thank you very much for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we will be back with more of your calls coming up.
Support comes from Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocandWealthStrategies.com. Washington County Tourism, announcing Farm and Fiber Tour, featuring spinning, knitting, and weaving demonstrations, showcasing alpacas, goats, sheep, and more, Saturday and Sunday, April 26th and 27th. WashingtonNYCounty.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. And Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenAndPerrin.com.
One 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Gordon Fricke, our guest. 1-800-348-2551. An email here from Ed. It says, 1. Where is the leak in my O2 Accord that gets only the driver foot well wet?
Well, that's a good question, and we can't ask him any questions because
no.
This is via what is this? An email?
Yeah.
Yep.
You can ask me, and I'll pretend I'm Ed.
Well, one thing that always comes under suspicion is a sunroof. Because sunroofs are a hole in the roof of the car, and any water that gets past the glass panel or the steel panel has to get drained away, because that seal that you see on the sunroof is not the total water seal. Water gets through there, it hits a tray, the tray has drain tubes on it, and they all run outside.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that he's got an issue with one of his sunroof drains, and it could be the front drain.
Getting into his feet?
Yeah, because if it backs up, it has to run somewhere, and it'll trickle down the A-pillar and end up on the driver's floor.
Okay.
So I'd be suspicious of that. I'd be suspicious of a windshield leaking. If the windshield's ever been replaced, you could be suspicious of that.
Oh, boy.
And or a door seal on the driver's side of the car. So there's definitely ways water can get in.
All right. And what's the best way to find out?
If you're diagnosing the problem yourself, rig up a garden hose with a spray nozzle on it, tape it up so it sprays constantly, tape it to a ladder, and put the car in a controlled rainstorm and go in the car with a flashlight and poke around, see if you can see any water dripping in.
Okay, that's a lot of work, but maybe worth it. All right, here's part two, a second question from Ed in the email. It says trimming belt, but I think timing belt is what we're talking about here. Timing belt not changed yet, but only 86,000 miles, but overdue time-wise. Is there a trimming belt? This is a timing belt.
Yeah, he's talking timing.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's always a subject for discussion, time versus mileage.
It's an O2 Accord.
Yeah, it's time.
It's time.
Because that belt has been on that engine since 2002, and it's not going to like being on there forever, even though the miles are low.
So in other words, it may be within tolerance there, but the 12 years, intervening years.
It's a belt. It's okay. Going to deteriorate, crack, and break sooner or later.
All right, back to the phones we go. We go to Andrew in Saratoga Springs. Andrew, you're up.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, so I've got a 2000 Mitsubishi Mirage, and what happens is sometimes I go to put it in park, and I try to pull my keys out, and the keys don't want to come out. And what turns out, the car doesn't seem like it completely went into park. Sometimes what I got to do is put my foot out the door and kind of rock it back and forth until it seems like park clicks in for me to get my keys out.
Yeah.
What's going on? Can I fix it myself? How much would it cost? That kind of thing.
Yeah. That's not uncommon. There is a mechanism that, and it's usually in the form of a cable, that when you put that shifter into park, it relays a movement up to the ignition to allow you to remove the key. And if that doesn't happen, it doesn't want the keys coming out because it doesn't think you're in park. It's purely a safety issue.
Yeah.
Some causes for that could be a lot of wear in that shifter, you know, from all the thousands of times it's been moved around. You could, if there's any way you can get to that mechanism, you could try to get some lubricant in there, some WD-40 or something like that. You could spray a little lube in the lock, hoping that there might be something going on where the lock cylinder meets that cable mechanism. Or just when you come to the stop, really put it in park pretty rapidly and see if that solves the problem, at least for now. You know, really put it into park fast.
If you take it into the shop, is that an expensive repair?
It depends. It depends if they find something worn, if the cable's worn, or there could be an adjustment somewhere in there.
This is a mechanical cable and not an electrical cable?
What I think his car has is a mechanical cable, yeah.
Okay. Andrew, thanks.
All right, thanks.
I remember my first car was a 1965 Pontiac Le Mans. I could take the key out while I was driving.
Absolutely. You could move the shifter all over the place. You could throw it right in park at 60 if you wanted to.
Yeah, and that's one thing I actually didn't do, but interesting. Tim in Gilderland. Tim, you're up.
Yes, I'm calling about we're supposed to get a rise in gas prices during the summer, and I've heard two different explanations for it. One is the gas companies say they're switching to a different blend for the summertime, and the other explanation is more, and I don't know if either of these are true or accurate, that it's the driving season and the demand for gasoline goes up.
That sounds about right.
But I was curious about that explanation that they switched to a different blend.
Yeah. Both of the things you're saying are true. Winter gasoline does get changed, so it's more volatile, so it can light up at super cold temperatures. It's also less efficient, so most everybody gets worse gas mileage in the winter than they do in the summer. So the fuel companies start to blend out that the way they blend it for the volatility in warmer weather, and that's happening now. Is it more costly to do that? I don't know. I'm not sure if that has an effect on it, but a lot of times price increases get blamed on a lot of things that aren't maybe completely true, but I think the old supply and demand is probably most of it, because more people are driving and the gas companies are going to sell more. They have to produce more and stockpile more, but that's probably the majority of it. And then, of course, they always want to blame some skirmish somewhere in the world.
Right, Ukraine.
Overproduction.
Whatever.
I think that's pretty much the story.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Russ in Waterford. Hi, Russ. You're up.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My nephew bought a car recently, and I'm not exactly sure of the model. I know it's a 2002 Volvo, and it's got a 60 in it. I think it might be a P60. I'm not sure. But anyways, right after he bought it a couple of times, this car went into what the computer calls limp mode or limp home mode. And, you know, he took it to a mechanic, and the mechanic basically tells him that the transmission is shot. But I'm curious about that, because I actually looked it up, and I know the internet can be dangerous, trust me. But it said that the 02 Volvo had a problem with some type of control module on the transmission. So I'm wondering, is it worth getting a second opinion, or do I just take his word for it that he needs a new transmission?
Yeah. So it's on the back of the. Is this a sport utility or is this a sedan? What does it look like? I'd like.
No,
to know.
It's a Ford. It's a four-door sedan.
Okay, but it's a Saab, and there's a number 60 in the.
No,
model?
I'm sorry. No, it's a Volvo.
A Volvo.
No. Volvo.
So it's probably an S60.
Yes, that's correct. That's what it is. Now you say that. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Right. And does it say T5? Do you said? I thought you said something about a T or a T6.
It has a T in it, but I don't know what the rest of it is. Okay. I apologize for that, but
yeah,
I don't.
That's okay. Volvos up until about, I think, 04 did have transmission issues in those model cars. The S70s, the V70s, and the 60s, maybe they used the same transmission. I'm not sure, but there were some problems. To answer your question about a second opinion, definitely. Did it get diagnosed by a shop, did you say?
Yeah, a reputable shop.
Yeah.
But like I said, the problem is I saw on the internet that they had several problems with this car, and it had something to do with a control module that was associated with the transmission, and they addressed it by extending the warranty on those cars. So now I'm torn.
Well, this is what I would do. I would call a Volvo dealer with your VIN number,
okay,
current mileage and all the information, and just ask that question. So you've got a car with what you think might be some transmission problems. Is there any extension to the warranty, which an 02 car, I'd have a hard time believing there is.
No, I agree too.
But also, if there is reprogramming, it has to be carried out at the dealer, and they might say for X minimum number of dollars, we can bring your car in, diagnose it, and if there's any updates to the software, we can do it and see if it solves the problem. I think I'd be willing to take that maybe $100-some gamble on that to see if that's the case. But you could have a transmission problem for sure.
But nowadays it seems so drastic to completely replace a transmission. Usually there's so many modules and various things associated with it. I don't know. I will take your advice. I will call Volvo, and I will tell them to schedule an appointment with those guys and let them get their hands on it.
Exactly.
Thanks, Russ. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to James in Oneonta. Hi, James.
Hey, how are you? Thank you so much for taking this call. I think you're going to make my day because I tried before to get through and was unable. So
okay.
I'm glad I won this one. Here's a question real quick. I got a 2005 Volkswagen Touareg. We drove it to Florida this past winter. It just turned 100,000 miles on the drive down. On the drive down, we got bad gas. We kept babying the car. Every time the car would get to a half tank, we filled it and had dry gas. We made it all the way to Miami, took it into a Volkswagen dealership there, and the VW dealer said, nope, nothing wrong with the car. Drove it home, had no problem. Got home, and at a half a tank, it started spitting and sputtering and doing the bad gas thing. Took it into my local dealership here. New plugs, new points, new injectors, the whole thing that goes along with it. A couple of weeks later, started again, took it back to the dealership. They're now telling me it's the timing chain, has nothing to do with the combustion of the gas. They're telling me it's the timing chain. It continues to do this only at half a tank. For me, it's really hard for me to believe that it's the timing chain. So what do you all think?
So the car runs absolutely normally until you get below a half a tank.
Yes.
Okay.
And occasionally, if we park it on an incline at that half tank or almost at that half tank level, it will start again. It will start spitting and sputtering.
And if
go ahead.
No, so if you fill the tank, problem is over until it gets done.
Goes away.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. The timing, is your check engine light ever on?
No.
Okay. I don't believe that the the timing is an issue based on what you told me, because if the timing goes out of whack, the computer's watching a bunch of sensors and it's going to turn the check engine light on. It's going to give somebody some code information about camshaft timing or cam adjusters or something like that. And I'm not that familiar with how the gas tank is set up on that vehicle. Can you drive that below a half, or does it really start running so badly you don't dare go any further?
It runs so badly we don't dare take it out of town.
Yeah.
Below a half tank.
Yeah, yeah. I think you mentioned earlier that is a split tank system.
It is.
I think there's two vessels. It's one tank, but I think there's two different compartments. And
that's correct.
There's a device in there that pumps the fuel. It keeps the fuel level all the time in both tanks. It pumps it over. There could be something going on with that transfer system in there.
Yeah.
That would be my guess. And I think you're going to have to go somewhere else with it.
So in other words, it's like running out of gas?
Well,
it's running out of gas?
He could be experiencing fuel starvation. Yes.
So one tank is not filling.
He may be running that thing down to the point where it's meeting that halfway point where you've got to keep both tanks pumped. One's got to be pumped over to the other to keep.
Yeah.
I thought it was a fuel pump. That's what I was thinking, because it makes no sense that it only does it at a half a tank.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the pump itself, but it might be the mechanism in there that keeps those tanks in sync.
Mm-hmm. Why not just have one tank?
Well, because of the shape of the floor, and his car's all-wheel drive, so there's a drive shaft going through there, so the tank has to go around that.
Yeah.
But you need the volume of fuel, and that's the only way you can do it. A lot of cars today have that two containers, but it's one tank. I'd be suspicious of that system and take it from there, because your cam chain is not going to go bad and then get good again and then go bad and get based on fuel level, you know?
So let me ask one last question. I'll get off the phone. So let's say I continue to drive it, and for some unknown reason, Volkswagen is right, and the chain breaks. Am I damaging the engine?
Yeah, yeah, that would be awful.
It's possible the chain could be in bad shape, having nothing to do with this, though,
right? Well, that's entirely possible, too, that it might be the chain could be having an issue unrelated to the tank problem.
Okay, guys, thank you so much. I appreciate this. You've helped me a lot.
We hope. James, thanks a lot, and I'm glad you finally made it through. Gordon Fricke is our guest, 1-800-348-2551. Glenn in Clifton Park. Glenn, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to talk about diesel fuels. I got a 04 Dodge Cummins diesel, it's a straight six, 5.9. And last January, I filled up down in South Jersey, and I live in Clifton Park. Remember, routinely going to -5, -10, trucked outside. Okay, and I ended up replacing the fuel filter, three times. So I guess my question is, I couldn't get Hess to answer, or Sunoco, is there that much difference between fuel from Sunoco in South Jersey to Hess in Saratoga County?
Love this question.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Let's say it's January.
It was.
The further south you travel, the less additives are in diesel fuel to keep it from congealing in cold weather. And the gas company or the fuel companies do have winter blends. But I can tell you that this winter they didn't put enough stuff in up here because
so cold.
Oh, yeah. A lot of truckers and a lot of people with diesel engines were having their fuel gel up this year, where they haven't had that happen in years.
Well, I was cutting with 5% kerosene, and I also used that diesel service, the white one. And then one time I had to use the diesel 911 because it was so bad I couldn't get home.
Well, are you always fueling up in New Jersey and then coming back?
No, that was the thing. No, that was, I was down there on business, and it's like a 40-gallon tank, so it was pretty low. But, New Jersey's 50 cents cheaper than New York, so that's different, you, Governor. So anyway, I tanked up in New Jersey because Christy gives a better deal.
Nice.
Yeah, but he wasn't aware of it. No, I'm just
kidding. No, I think on the highway they would have given me a winter blend all the way through, like on the parkway, a turnpike down in New Jersey.
Yeah. I have a diesel truck. My flatbed's a diesel, and I don't put giant mileage on it, so I'm not overly concerned about keeping the additives in it in cold weather. So I overdo that power services stuff that you're talking about that goes in the fuel.
Yeah.
I put it in a little heavier than they than the formula than they say, because overdoing it doesn't harm anything.
Well, if it's below zero, you got to double it up.
Yeah, and that's if we get another winter like we had this year, next year, you should keep that stuff in the tank and not rely on the fuel companies, because they'll get a batch that's not going to make it, and then you're stuck on the road gelled up, and they're not going to bail you out. You know?
No, that's the deal.
Yeah.
What about the kerosene? My friend at Caterpillar, he always cuts with 5% kerosene.
Yeah, I mean that's also a way to do it. Truckers do it, and you know same thing. You got to work the percentages and make it a little heavier when it's colder. But either way, you need to do that in these really cold winters.
Okay, I had one other question.
Very quickly. Like, sure, go ahead.
Okay, on 140,000, the Cummins book calls for valve length adjustment, and I got a lot of people saying don't bother.
Yeah, you know, I would talk to somebody that really knows those engines to see if that's really necessary, because it might be, because that is a derived, that's a real truck engine that truck is based on.
Right.
So I would check into that, because you definitely don't want to ignore something that important if it's
compression, obviously. Yeah,
it could be trouble, yeah.
Glenn, thanks a lot for the call. We take a break right now, Mr. Zach the Engineer, 1-800-348-2551.
Support comes from Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities, open 7 days a week, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. Smith College Museum of Art, presenting The Eye is a Door, landscape photographs by Ann Whiston Spurn, now on view. Exhibition-related programs and more, smith.edu/artmuseum for details. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. And Amtrak, announcing the Amtrak I Love New York travel packages. Available between any two Amtrak train stations in New York State or Montreal. ILoveNewYork.com for details.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number, and Gordon Fricke is our guest. Gordon, we've had several callers who have wanted your contact info, so let's get that contact info out there right now.
All right, how much of you want? Everything? You want phone, email?
Whatever. Yeah, phone and an email.
Right,
let's do that.
Let's go with phone. 518-686-4575.
All right.
And email, as you know, I'm not...
Oh, yeah, well, I should
on,
tell the listeners.
On top of checking it like a teenager, like
it's
my
true.
Kids would.
Or anyone for that matter.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
I do check it, but sometimes not as often as I should.
Have your secretary do it.
Yeah, well, she's bombarded with a trillion other things.
Okay, and, all right.
So it's Gordon, the letter F, at symbol, BarberFricke.com.
So Barber.
Gordon F. at BarberFricke.com.
Okay, very good. All right, a couple from the email here to Vox Pop. This is a classic. All right, here we go. Hello, need you guys to settle a dispute. When my wife is speeding and sees a police cruiser ahead, instead of hitting the brakes, she very gently pulls up the emergency brake for a second because she thinks she is more likely to be pulled over if she is seen slamming on the brakes. How bad is this? Thanks, Pinky.
That is a good question.
That's a good question.
Because a lot of people think the same way. If those brake lights come on like a Christmas tree, he knows I'm going too fast. But if I ease on the parking brake, so the question is it bad for the car?
Yeah, that's the question.
Well, it depends on the setup, because some cars have little miniature parking brake shoes inside of the rear brake rotors.
All right.
And they don't get used a lot, and they get very rusty, and the material gets very frail and brittle. If you were to slam those on at 60, you could destroy the parking brake. You could churn up a whole bunch of junk back there and really be in bad shape.
Okay.
other cars when you pull up on the handbrake, European cars, it actually applies the rear brakes. They're not as effective as the front brakes. You're not going to slow down fast enough to get that cop's radar down to the point where he's going to say, you're all set.
Yeah.
So I don't know how effective it is because it's not going to slow you down that fast. And if it causes hundreds of dollars worth of emergency brake work,
the ticket would be cheaper.
Maybe.
Okay. So the insurance increase and everything else. Well, that was a great one.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for that email. Here's another one. My daughter has a 2013 Honda Fit that she purchased new. She has about 16,000 miles on it, and recently she had it to the dealer for an oil and filter change. At this time, the dealer indicated she needed to have her brakes cleaned. I've never heard of this before, and I'm wondering if it's really necessary or if somebody is just trying to take advantage of a young female. Thanks, Dan from Coxsackie.
Yeah, that's a good question because I do see that on that brand of car from various dealers. And that a car that young with those few miles on it, I don't really see that there's going to be a big need to clean anything up. But in the Northeast, with all the salt and slush, what we do see on cars, and it's usually when they're older, is corrosion gets where the brake pads are mounted, and it can cause the brake pads to stick in their mounts, and that's bad. So it's a gray area. It's maybe not quite necessary this young in the car's life, but we do see the need for that to happen.
So it's not out of the realm of possibility.
It's not. It just seems like a bit early for that particular car.
So maybe get a second opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, it is good maintenance, so you can't deny that, but I don't know if the car really needs it or not.
Okay, let's go to Lucy in Pownell, Vermont. Lucy, you're up.
Okay, hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2000 Ford Ranger, and the oil, high and low pressure needle there, when I'm at a stoplight, it goes like crazy. It's shaking up and down, and my check gauge light comes on. But when I'm driving, it goes back to normal.
Yeah. How many miles are on that Ranger?
About 130.
Yeah. This is what I would have done because it might just be a signaling issue. It could be the unit on the engine sending a bad signal to the gauge in the dashboard. But
okay.
But you don't know that. It would be good to have the engine's oil pressure tested at a repair shop to make sure it's really good. And if the oil pressure is fine, then you might just need the sensor on the engine that sends out the signal to the gauge. It's more than likely that fails way more often than the instrument because it's out on the hot engine and it's been, you know, measuring that oil pressure for 130 some thousand miles.
Right.
But I would get that checked because if you have an issue cropping up, if you're starting to have an oil pressure problem, it could get real bad real fast.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Let's go to Bob in Gilderland. Hiya, Bob. You're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi. How you doing, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
General question. I normally put additives in my fuel on all my cars, particularly when I'm taking a long trip. Are they worth it? Do they do anything? There's a variety of different products out there from different price ranges, fuel injector cleaners, fuel system cleaners. Any advice on any of that stuff?
Yes. Yep. Very good question. Common subject. And they are very good to use. And there are good ones and bad ones.
Yeah.
And generally, you get what you pay for. So the good ones are usually more expensive. And, you know, I can't drop brand names or endorse any one particular company. But there are some very good additives out there that are pretty necessary to use nowadays because we were talking earlier about the variety of gas quality and the buildups that are happening on some of the engines. So... there's usually some good stuff in black bottles.
Okay. Well, without getting into names, are there ones that you would say, oh, gosh, that's a little sketchy?
Some of the really lesser expensive ones that you know, claim to do everything and they're only, you know, $299.
Well, can they do harm, though?
No, I don't think so. They just probably don't have they're not as powerful and as effective as the real professional ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
And these would be fuel cleaners, right? Or injector cleaners, as they call them?
Yeah, fuel injection cleaner. That's what they do. They clean up deposits.
And if you get the right stuff, Bob, you'll feel the difference when you drive.
And how often?
It depends on the grade of gasoline you're using. If you're using a top-tier gas, which is the higher end, they have way more additives in them, and you need less additives put into the tank on, you know, in addition to that.
Yep. I heard your discussion on Top Fuels. Okay.
Thanks, Bob.
Very much.
Appreciate the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke is our guest. And remember, we have a new app. If you would like to try it, I think you will like it. It's our new mobile app. It's for streaming audio, headlines, podcasts, and more. Just go to the iTunes or Google Play App Store, search WAMC, and install. Try it. You'll like it, as the old commercial said. Let's go to Mike in Saratoga. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing? Congratulations on the app. I'm excited to download it.
Oh, good. Give it a shot.
I got a belt question. Specifically, I got a 2009 Subaru Outback, and just a general question for novices. The timing belt and the serpentine belt, like, two-part question. When do you recommend changing those? And the other part, is there a way for a novice to go in and look and see what the condition is of those belts?
Well, the one on the outside, what's called the serpentine belt or the drive belt, you can see that one. So when you raise the hood and look, you know, at the front of the engine, that's what you're seeing. And you can look at it, look to see if there's any cracking or if it's looking deteriorated, and also look on the inside of it, not the flat part that you see looking straight down, but where the little V grooves are, rises and dips. You know, it's like a multi grooved belt. Look for cracking in there and glazing. As a rule of thumb, on your car, the Subaru uses a very good quality belt. So, you know, when you start getting over 60,000 miles, you probably ought to take a peek and make sure it looks all right.
Okay.
And on an 09, you said, correct?
Yes.
I'm not sure if by 09 Subaru had transitioned away from timing belts, but Subaru did go to internal chains.
Mm-hmm.
And it might have been 2010, but that belt, if you still have one, you can't see it. And it really needs to be changed when it's recommended in your owner's manual, and there's usually mileage and time intervals.
Is the fact that you can't see it indicative of a major job to replace it?
Well, yeah, because a lot more stuff has to be removed to gain access to it. So, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, good luck with
great.
That.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Mike. We appreciate it. Sarah in Amherst, Mass. Sarah, you're on.
Hi. I have a 06 Toyota Highlander with 100,000 miles on it. And a month or so ago, my tire pressure light came on. And I thought, they look fine. Maybe it's because we're hitting potholes, et cetera, often. And then I checked it. It looked fine. And then about a week later, I check engine light came on. So I go to my service guy, and he checks it, and he says the tire's fine, but need a exhaust sensor or something, and in order to get at it, he was going to have to take out a piece of the exhaust system, which might mean replacing the catalytic converter, because it's all one piece, so very expensive.
Yikes.
In any case, I declined, because I'm not going to have an issue, as he said, until next time I need a sticker and they do an emissions test. So at this point, the check engine light went off. He said it would go off by itself. It went off, but now the low tire pressure light came back on.
So he must have corrected the tire pressures. Did he bring them all up to the normal amount?
At the time, yes.
Yeah.
He rotated them.
Yep. A lot of Toyotas had a tire pressure sensor in the spare, as well as the four wheels on the ground. And I don't know if your Highlander does, but I know that RAV4s of that vintage do. And the tire on the RAV4 is up on the tailgate, and it's under a big plastic cover.
Yeah.
And I encountered one right about in 07 or 08 when tire pressure monitoring was just barely coming around. and the light came on, and I checked all of the tires on the car and put them to the correct amount, and the light stayed on, and I said, oh, no, what's this going to be? And then I did a little research on it, and it said this could be a five-sensor car, and it was. So I put the spare up to the correct pressure, and the problem was totally solved.
I'll be darned.
So I would double-check, make sure that car doesn't mm-hmm. have a fifth sensor.
Mm-hmm.
Other awesome. Than that, it needs more diagnosing if that's not the case.
Yeah, it's getting some age on it, so I'm going to have to do some other stuff. And
yeah.
The mechanic. So thank you very much.
You're
thank
welcome.
You, Sarah. So you mean to tell me that there are cars out there that if your tire pressure is low, the check engine light goes on?
No. She had two separate things going on there. Yeah. Yeah,
because that would be too much for me to bear.
No, I hope they don't get that deep, but you never know.
Let's go to Brian in Duanesburg. Brian, you're up.
Hello, gentlemen. I've got an 02 A6 Audi with a 3-liter, and okay. I started replacing the positive crankcase ventilation hoses because those old hard plastic ones, and one of them was cracked. And I found in the system, there's no delicate way to say it, loaded with snot, like a yellow pasty, all the way into the valve covers, et cetera, and the diaphragm had a hole in it. Now, is that, if that was building up pressure, would that be the cause of my chronic valve cover leak?
Partly.
Yeah.
The ventilation system on those cars is far too complex than it needs to be. And they're using all these hard plastic tubes that always deteriorate and crack. So you've got leaks all over the place of crankcase ventilation. It's not doing the job that it should be. They should have looked at cars of the 60s and just used a PCV valve and a vacuum line and a vent on the other side, and it seemed to work fine, but they got to go crazy with all this stuff. So you're not alone in that. And that the yellow stuff is moisture and oil vapors that are accumulating. That's not dangerous. Doesn't mean the engine's blowing up. But
how can I, after I do replace all the lines and everything, how can I make sure that the crankcase vents are functioning properly?
Well, it's hard to do that, but you've got to replace them all, and there's also some vacuum controlled pieces in there that are going to be definitely plugged up. So you got a lot of stuff to change in there to get that thing working again properly, and you might need valve cover gaskets anyway. But if the crankcase is not vented properly, your valve cover leaks will be worse.
All right, Brian, thank you very much. So not real good design there.
Just overly engineered, too much.
Okay, and you worked on German cars and studied them. And
I've sworn at a lot of them.
Let's go to Keith in Cornwall. Keith, you only have about a minute here.
All right, quickly. My transmission will not get out of second gear. I woke up one morning, went out to drive it, check engine light was on, drove it, and wouldn't get out of second gear. Took it to an auto parts store, you know, because I didn't want to dump more money into this thing. They told me all my solenoids were blown on the transmission.
Well, they do have scan tools at the auto parts stores, but I don't know if they're really accurate of giving you the right information. But your transmission's in limp mode, and that's why it's only in one gear. So you the only thing you can do is get it in somewhere to a shop, a repair shop or a transmission shop, to do some diagnostics on it, tell you what's wrong with it, and if it's something you want to fix, great. If it's not, you know, you'll have to make a decision at that point.
Because
you can't drive it. You won't be able to drive it in that one gear forever.
No. I'm puttering around town, but it's definitely not going to make it.
No.
Sorry, Keith.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you very much. So that's not a car where you can check the codes yourself?
You can, sure. Well, no, not. You mean like on board? No. You have to. It's got to be plugged in, and somebody's got to read the codes with a scanner.
Why would they do that?
Make it so you have to do that?
Yeah.
Well, most people are not going to be savvy enough to read those codes. And
this is the internet age, man.
I mean, it's great to get the codes, but then what do you do with them? They only give
you self-diagnose and then call Gordon and say, I know exactly what's wrong. And
they lead you in the direction of the problem. There's no question about it. But then you got to do a lot more checking.
All right. Well, this was fun. Gordon Fricke, thank you so much for being here. Thanks to everybody who called in. I'm sorry if you didn't make it through. Gordon Fricke, always a popular guest. He'll be back again next month. Support comes from Pine Cobble School, Williamstown, Massachusetts. Curriculum includes Spanish language beginning at age 3 and Latin in fourth grade. A good beginning never ends. PineCobble.org. Albany Institute of History and Art, GE presents The Mystery of the Albany Mummies, using ancient artifacts and modern technologies to uncover secrets of the museum's mummies. Now open Thursday nights until 8 p.m., albanyinstitute.org. And Haldora Rhinebeck, women's clothing designed by Haldora, washable silk, linen, cotton creations for spring, sewn in upstate New York. Rossapuro and English weather sweaters, haldora.com. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Anonymous Sandy answered your calls. Thanks to you for listening and for calling. Tomorrow it's Food Friday, and we have a real treat in store for you. Right now, another treat, it's the news.